Hi there, thank you for joining me on this conversation. For those listening to this as a podcast, welcome to our fourth episode of the series. My name is Rue and I'm a senior associate at Winkworth Sherwood's Charities and Social Enterprises team. I am absolutely thrilled to be joined by two esteemed guests from the Charity Commission of England and Wales. With us today, we have Arti Thakur, Director of Legal and Accounting Services, and Stuart Wood, Head of Registrations. Arti, Stuart, a very warm welcome to you both.
Thank you very
Afternoon.
much. First of all, thank you both so much for sparing the time and for joining me today. I'm really truly honoured to have you both here. Now, I met the both of you, I guess, formally at the Charity Commission AGM last year. And prior to that, I had certainly attended quite a few charity events where I had the opportunity to watch Arti present on various topics. And Stuart, you may recall when I met with you last year, we had quite a long and enthralling discussion on charity registrations. I thought it would be useful in this podcast for our listeners to get to know a little bit more about the both of you, and to really learn about what you're currently up to at the Charity Commission. Perhaps if I may start by asking Arti, can you describe your journey into the world of charities and now working, I believe, over 15 years at the Charity Commission? Thank you. God, that does make me feel old as an intro to this conversation, but thank you. So gosh, my journey was a slightly unconventional or and unpredictable one in that sense. I hadn't actually planned to go into the Charity Commission, but much like a lot of the staff at the commission, I had a strong volunteering ethos sort of throughout my childhood, or had been involved in sort of charitable work. And actually, what had prompted me was it's quite an extreme example, probably. I was in chambers, qualified as a barrister, was working for a period of time, and thought this doesn't quite seem to align with, my definition of happiness or success. And it was actually my then professor from university who said, "Why don't you apply for this particular scholarship and go and work for the Genocide Tribunal in Rwanda?" I thought,
Oh,
that's left field. And I thought, I'll give it a go. And I was very lucky to be successful. So off I went to Tanzania to work on the International Criminal Tribunal there for about 6 months. And
wow.
that was a phenomenal opportunity, obviously very different and diverse, but it really changed my perspective, I think, in terms of what I wanted to do, in terms of my working career and what I wanted to offer back to society. So I decided there and then, actually, it wasn't a long-term plan for me to stay in the field. So I came back to England and thought, oh, what can I do here? And lo and behold, I got sort of headhunted for the role for the Charity Commission. And I thought, that's interesting. We'll go to the interview and see what happens. And there we go. That 15 years later, I'm still here. So that's my story.
Oh, that is great to hear. And Stuart, dare I say, does your journey follow a similar unconventional way?
Well, it's not quite as exotic as Arti, and it's slightly boring in comparison. But I think my journey started when I was at college. I remember volunteering to join the lifeboat crew, predominantly because that sounded really exciting, and I like the idea of it. But it was some point whilst I was volunteering for them that I really sort of understood the impact that charities have on society. And there was this kind of realization about the void that would exist if charities didn't exist, and the impact that it would have. And I think having that sort of understanding when I was at college has really shaped my, I'm going to use the word destiny here, rather cringe worthy, but it certainly shaped the direction which I went in. And I ended up in senior management positions in some of the largest charities in the UK, actually, which was fantastic for me, having seen what happens on the ground and how large charities can have a real impact on society and people's lives. But I've always wanted to do more, and I've always wanted to be more engaged in the sector. And for me, I think when a role came up in the Charity Commission, it seemed like the ideal opportunity for me, and I jumped at that opportunity. I think that was a real kind of like, oh, this is just what I'm looking for. And I haven't looked back since. It's genuinely surpassed all my expectations. I thought joining an organisation of about 20,000 people, that's what it felt like when I was on the outside looking in. And on my first day, I realised there was just 400 of us. And I thought, goodness me, there's 400 people managing 180,000 charities. There's an annual income of 88 billion. How on earth is that possible? And what I realised very, very quickly was that, 400 people managing such a large and diverse sector, Every single one of those people make a massive difference. And for me, I kind of feel that every day I'm doing something that has a genuine output at the end of it. And so I've been here about the same sort of period as Artie, actually. I think I'm in my 14th year now. And there's not a day that's gone by period of time that I've kind of thought, you know what, I've done something today that's made a difference in society. So an enormously fulfilling and rewarding journey for me, but not as exotic as Artie.
Yeah, well, I can definitely sense your both your passions and enthusiasm and really purpose. And congratulations for both of you for not turning back and not looking back and for surviving the test of time and hopefully continue to. So I guess you both, in a way, touched on this already, but can you tell me a bit more about what you both enjoy most about working at the Charity Commission and what are some of the notable changes you've seen over the years? And maybe if I start with Stuart this time first.
Can I pick three things that I enjoy the most?
Oh, go on then.
The first one is the team that I work with. I'm so privileged to work with an absolutely fantastic team. The knowledge, the experience, and the skills on this team are remarkable. And even better than that, they've got wonderful characters as well. So I think for me, the most enjoyable part of all day, every day, are the people that I work with. Absolutely remarkable team. So truly lucky with that aspect. The second thing that I think is that I enjoy the most is that I see the best in society. I'm fortunate enough to work in registration, so every day I see between 40 and 50 new applications to register new charities, and that's 40 to 50 groups of people that have got together and decided they want to do things to help others. And it's hugely humbling. You know, you see that society in this country is really quite remarkable, and the need and the desire to help others is truly fantastic. So that's something that you kind of get that feel-good factor from, which is wonderful. And the third thing for me, and it's certainly not the least, is the diversity of the work that we deal with. It's absolutely huge, and no 2 days are the same. And obviously looking at new applications, even if we just pick a small sector, perhaps medical charities, for example. Before I joined the commission, I could have perhaps named 20 or 30 types of medical conditions. Over the last 14, 15 years, I have seen thousands because of this organisation supporting almost every condition that's out there. And you kind of see the diversity of the sector and think, wow, it's truly remarkable. So there's a lot going on, which puts me in a really fortunate position, I think. Aww. In terms of the changes, though, I think it's all about technology for me. That seems to be the biggest notable change, both inside and outside the commission. And I work with people that have been in the commission for longer than me and Artie, and they remember when the Public Register of Charities was a book. You phone somebody up and you said, oh, can I make an appointment to come and see the register? And you'd go in and you'd view it. And back then, you know, it sounds very obvious now, doesn't it? If you're going to have a register, it'd be online. But back then, that wasn't the obvious thing to do. But the commission realised that it had to embrace technology. It had to be innovative. And putting that register online at an early stage was the first part of a very long journey around our sort of technical innovation and all those sorts of things. And I can't see that ever ending. Just this week, we've launched our new guidance on social media usage. When I joined the commission, we never thought we'd need that. So I think the technology, it's just moving forward all day, every day. And that's been a really noticeable change. And we see it from the outside as well coming in. So in terms of the difference of the applications that we see, it's very much technology that makes a difference. When drones came out, people started submitting applications to use drones for things like search and rescue. When Bluetooth was new, people were saying, oh, let's put Bluetooth emitters in crime hotspots to alert people of pickpockets and that sort of thing. You know, now we're looking at things like blockchain technology, cryptocurrency, and all these sorts of things. So for me, I think the noticeable changes, both inside and outside the commission, have all been driven by technology. Really quite remarkable. It certainly keeps us on our feet.
Wow, that's really incredible. And I can certainly vouch for having attended previous Charity Commission AGMs where I met quite a few of your colleagues from different departments, and I could really see how well knit the commission was and how helpful everyone was. And I really do get a sense of that. So I can really understand what you mean by teamwork. Artie, what about you?
Without sounding cliched or as though Stuart and I have actually spoken on this, we haven't. It's similar reasons, actually. So for me, the breadth of work is just astounding. I mean, really, no day is the same in terms of content or the types of things you'll deal with. So, you know, obviously from a very particular legal perspective, I've been very fortunate to, you know, do things from developing national policies to, you know, going into court or dealing with those arguments to legislation in parliament, you know, to advising other governments internationally. You couldn't really ask for a better spread of work. And with that comes obviously a level of responsibility and the ability to really challenge yourself in terms of your thinking, your analysis, your ability to, you know, drive both strategic and operational decisions forward. And in my particular role, as you know, I obviously manage accountants as well. So that's a huge eye opener because they speak a completely different language. The language of numbers and the language of words, as it were, are not necessarily always on the same page. But equally, there's a huge amount of synergies between the professions as well. And actually, you know, those the broader aspects of my executive role. So whether that's managing the team or thinking about, you know, commission wide policies, etc., they force me to be a much better lawyer all round because they're always forcing me to think slightly differently. And all of that helps to inform really my skill set. So from that perspective, it's incredible in terms of its challenge as well as its reward. And really, as Stuart said, it's the people, actually. We have a lot of people who have worked at the Commission for a long time because they genuinely love what they do. They're very committed to it. And, you know, we just have a really genuinely close bond between a lot of the team members. So that's very unusual. I've actually just had a returner from a different department who actually said, I came back because I didn't realise how much the commission offered in terms of its workforce ethos and actually how much the sort of the culture of the team meant to me. So that was lovely, very humbling for me to hear, but also just it reminds you of the things not to take for granted in your day job, actually, because not everybody experiences that. So that's, you know, why I definitely what I find enjoyable in terms of this work. And gosh, in terms of the changes, I mean, you know, all of the above in terms of what Stuart has said, I think generally the regulatory landscape has just got more complex. I think that's my one thing that sticks with me. So, you know, when I first started out doing just high risk investigations, there was sort of a general trend or sort of scope of investigations. And then, you know, 9/11 happened and then we branched out into terrorism. And then we had the scandals in the international field in relation to safeguarding. So that became a sort of industry in itself. And I think watching the commission go from what was predominantly sort of financial based issues much more into these sort of more abstract nuanced areas, perhaps around behavior, where it's very difficult sometimes to show tangible outcomes. The pressure as a regulator, I think, is quite a challenge in the current environment to show your value for money as an organization, but also to help charities trust us in terms of saying, you know, we are doing this because we're hoping our intervention leads to a better outcome for both the particular charity and also for the sector more generally. So it's much more of a nuanced balancing act, I think, is the one thing that's definitely stuck with me in terms of changes to the regulatory landscape.
Yeah, and definitely it really shows. I mean, I subscribe to the Charity Commission LinkedIn posts and the gov.uk blog as well. And it really amazes me just really how up to date that the commission is. As Stuart mentioned, the social media policy that just came out, but also the trustee quiz, which I thought was very good to do, just to test any knowledge gaps for trustees who are volunteering at charities. So that itself is really useful. But then, of course, Stuart, you mentioned cryptocurrency, but we've also got the rise of artificial intelligence. So there's lots of external changing things that's going on. So I guess it remains to be seen how the commission responds to those externalities. Just so I don't go off piste, what advice would you give someone then who potentially wants to work at the Charity Commission? Artie, can I start with you first?
Sure. First thing, definitely apply. If we haven't sold it already, it's a very genuinely interesting place to work. So if you want, I think first, make sure you're the type of person that wants a challenge, wants to take responsibility for work and wants to drive particular, you know, work pieces. For us, that's definitely the kind of person that we're looking for in terms of that initiative and that discipline and that drive. So make sure you're that kind of person first, or else I think you suspect you might need to look at a different place to work. But I think, you know, come because ideally you want to make a difference. And the one thing I always say, especially as we're looking at, you know, diversity and recruitment and thinking about how do we make sure that we're also relevant to the current workforce as well as existing workforce and future workforce, you know, all of your experience is actually probably relevant in a way that I think sometimes is not always perhaps noted in other industries. And I think what's really interesting is civil service recruitment is very different from, say, private practice recruitment or perhaps another industry. So, you know, my advice would be learn about civil service recruitment as a process, because it is different. The sorts of things you have to talk about in application forms doesn't actually come naturally to a lot of people, certainly doesn't come naturally to lawyers. I had to learn. I remember when I first filled in the application form, it was again like a different language, although, you know, it's still within the realm of civil service recruitment. And, you know, that shifted as well in terms of whether it's success profiles or looking at behaviors. The way in which we expect people to demonstrate their competencies is something I'd say research. But really, you know, in terms of the substantive role, come because you really want to make that difference. You think you are interested in having that social impact that Stuart talked about earlier, because really that's what we are about. And you can demonstrate that in so many ways, irrespective of the type of, you know, discipline that you're in within the commission, because obviously, as you've seen, we cover a lot of different disciplines. So that would be my advice.
Oh, that's really good advice. And I think I saw that there was an EDI review that was carried out by the Charity Commission due to conclude this year as well. So it's, you know, from my reading of it and from the people I've met at the Charity Commission, it does seem like a very inclusive environment to work. Stuart, do you have anything to add to that question?
Yeah, I think if you've gone through the process that Artie describes and you join the commission, I'm just trying to reflect on my own experience when I first joined, actually. And I think I need to give the message, don't be overwhelmed or intimidated by the knowledge of the staff in the commission, because it can feel really quite intimidating. And I genuinely can remember my first week in the commission, and I'm sure I looked like a rabbit in the headlights, absolutely startled, because I've underestimated the complexity of charity law. And I seem to be surrounded by people with an endless knowledge of the sector that we regulate. And they're all lovely, and they're all talking about the training and the support. And I thought they were just quoting cliches by saying, oh, we're all on a learning curve and we're all on this together. But I also remember that first week, I was doing a tour of the team. I was saying, oh, what is it you're working on? I remember one lady, I said, oh, what case are you working on? And she said, oh, I'm dealing with this particular case. I've never seen anything like this before. I'm going to go and seek some legal advice on how to handle this. And I thought, fantastic. It's somebody new like me that I can sort of have that bond with, that nurture with. And I said, how long have you been with the commission? And she said, oh, I've been here over 20 years. And I looked at her and I thought, no, really? This is new and you've been doing this for over 20 years? And she looked at me with a straight face and said, after 20 years, you will still find something new every single week. And I've got to be honest, I didn't believe her. 14 years in, I can say that's absolutely correct. Yes, you will continue to see new things. Mm-hmm. So I think the main advice is, don't be intimidated when you join the commission. You will be surrounded by people with different knowledge levels, but we're genuinely all on this learning curve. We're all moving together. Some are further on that learning curve than others, but I think it's that supportive environment. So don't be intimidated. We'll all get there. Yes, and what you bring in from outside in terms of those different skill sets that Artie's mentioned, that just makes us stronger as an organisation. So go through the process that Artie said. Don't be intimidated when you join us, and yeah, become a part of the team.
Oh, thank you both. That was such good advice, because I totally agree, as Artie mentioned, there's not a lot of information for students who are looking for graduate jobs. You can see the civil service route, there's graduate schemes. So it's really invaluable to have your insight into the process and not to find it daunting. And clearly it's an amazing organisation to work for and very rewarding. Okay, moving on to something slightly different. What are the main trends that you're both currently seeing at the moment? Stuart, if I can start with you first.
I suppose that's your definition of trend. I think in terms of some high-level ones, the implementation of CIOs in 2012 has totally changed the regulatory landscape for us, I think. You know, in 2011, I think we had 5,500 applications. CIOs came in 2012, and now we're looking at about 9,000 applications this year. So it's gone up enormously. 80% of the applications we receive are for CIOs. So actually, I think the sector has really understood that, you know, that's a real reduction in the bureaucracy, that limited liability and the ability to enter into contracts in the name of the organisation. The advantages for being a CIO are huge. And about 20% of the work that we see are existing charities looking to incorporate as CIOs. So I think the sector is really evolving and understanding the benefits of being a CIO, which I think is fantastic. So that's certainly a trend. And then there's some more specific ones, and they tend to change in terms of what society needs at the time. And in registration, we're often the first to see that. So if we pick an example such as COVID, you know, it was in the first few days of COVID being announced that we started to receive applications for COVID. And it was everything from medical support to supporting those people that were isolated. So a true range of things under COVID. since then, if we consider that shorter period of time, I suppose, following, I think particularly the series that David Attenborough did, I think that really sparked the debate about the environment again, and people's awareness around the impact of the environment really grew. We've seen a surge in applications looking to protect and preserve the environment, everything from collecting plastics from the sea to kind of local initiatives to clean the local areas up. So that's been a big one. It won't surprise anybody to know that cost of living is one of the trends we see at the moment. There's nothing new about us getting applications for food banks. We've had them for years. I think the difference is that a lot of towns now don't have one organisation running food banks. They'll have several organisations doing food banks. And we've got things like warm banks for the first time last year, where places that will open up so people go and keep themselves warm during the winter. And that was the first year we'd ever experienced warm banks. And we've got baby banks coming up. Not where you can go and get babies, don't panic, okay. But where you can go clothing for babies and equipment for babies and all those sorts of things. So cost of living is really shaped and the environment that we're working with. And the other big one, I suppose, is national and international disasters. And we're always poised. So I think when we watch the news, very recently, the earthquake in Morocco, we're all poised. We then briefed our assessment team to keep an eye out for any applications connected to that because of the speed in which we'd need to move out to support something like that. And things like that do have an impact. The biggest one in the last few years, I suppose, was the war in Ukraine. We've had over 200 applications connected to the war in Ukraine, and we've registered everything from supporting refugees that come to the UK to actually supplying ambulances for use in the Ukraine. So a huge amount of public support and the reaction to things like this is absolutely massive. But you mentioned one earlier that I'm not going to ignore, and that's AI. And I think that's something that we're looking at now, thinking this is potentially something we're going to have to get our heads around. And what we've noticed over the last month, actually, is people using AI to submit application forms. And we know some people. Yeah, no, it is interesting.
And how can you tell? Do they just declare in the application that this is partly done by AI?
No, you can tell by the formatting's fairly generic. So I think most people are using ChatGPT. The formatting's fairly generic, but actually the language they're using is very generic as well. So there'll be a question there perhaps asking about educational merit. And the response will be, a charity must do X, Y, and Z. And that's problematic for us. Mm. So it's a general guide in terms of what charities could do, but it's not specific about that organisation. So we're having to look at something quite new there, saying, actually, how do we deal with this? What's not happening is they're not demonstrating how that organisation meets the various requirements. It's just a generic statement. But as an organisation, this is the first time that we've seen the use of AI. So for us, it's about saying, okay, this is something new. Now we'll have to look at our handling of that. And actually, quite an exciting situation for the Commission. How could the Commission use AI? You know, there's some real opportunities there, isn't there, in terms of going forward. So yeah, I didn't want to sort of go back to text. I'd already mentioned it, but I can't agree with that. Really big one on the horizon.
Yeah, absolutely. Gosh, Artie, did you have anything to add to that question?
As usual, Stuart's incredibly comprehensive on that. But I suppose just taking a slightly different lens, that's what we're seeing in terms of registration. And obviously, some of that touches on the issues that we'll see in caseware. But I suppose, again, from my perspective, looking at the trends as a regulator, for us, everything is on the up. So whether that's casework, registration applications, calls into the centre. I mean, I think last year we took around 68,000 calls, which, again, when you go back to Stuart's point around how big our organisation is and how big our teams are, you know, people are working incredibly hard. So it's always incredible. And again, very humbling from my perspective to see the commitment from staff who, you know, they want to get to the next call, but they want to deal with the one they're doing thoroughly, for example. Similarly with casework, you know, we talk about our stats and we've had 5,700, I think it's regulatory cases last year and 72 new statutory inquiries. That all sounds really alarming, but at the same time, it's not relative to the size of the sector, relative to the rate of registration and new charities we're seeing on the register, and actually where we've actually had quite effective intervention, even if people haven't agreed with, you know, the outcome, for example. So there's a lot for us in terms of understanding what are the risks that we need to prioritise and actually what can we manage in terms of an organisation. And I think secondly, when you think about the external facing environment, the one thing that I'm finding quite interesting to watch, but also again is quite tricky, is the impact of COVID, which and the cost of living crisis, I think, has led charities themselves to have to make some very difficult decisions. And unfortunately, you know, those can be unpopular because we have the rise of social media. So there's a lot of attacks, I think, when it comes to the decision making of a particular organization. But you know, what we keep trying to tell people is, you know, just because it's unpopular doesn't mean it's unreasonable. There is a distinction in terms of what charity trustees are able to do. So I think there is an increasing fractiousness, but at the same time, there is this incredible level of collaboration and innovation. So it's a really interesting sort of conflicting landscape, if I'm being honest, that we're very mindful of and thinking about how do we best use our resources to have the right and sort of most effective impact in this space. It's definitely a work in progress and something that we're having to keep an eye on. But, you know, watch the space and we'll see where we go.
Excellent. Thank you, Artie. Well, that leads me very nicely to my next question. If you could wave a magic wand and get all charity trustees to do two or three things consistently, what would they be, Artie?
That was quite an easy question, actually, because I'm always people hear me in the office all the time saying, have they read their GD? Because this is one of my pet issues.
Yeah.
Could you check what you're there to do? Are you there doing what you think you're meant to do? And actually, are you clear about what your powers or your limitations are? So, and that's not to be a lawyer about it, but genuinely, we're so surprised that, you know, mission creep happens, organic growth happens, that's absolutely fine. But, you know, there are unfortunately consequences that come with that legally and can lead you into very tricky territory. And often it's not us as a regulator who has concerns about that. It's members of the public who might complain, or disgruntled employees who suddenly go, well, hang on a minute, I've got a real issue with how my charity is being run. So please, please read your governing document. And I'm hoping that isn't, you know, it doesn't require a Harry Potter magic wand to achieve that. And secondly, which is related to that, I would really encourage trustee boards and potentially with staff as well, just once a year, do a health check, do a review of everything that you've got, whether it's your policies or your procedures in place. You know, ask yourself, do we have the right staff? Are we working on the right types of activities? You know, are we clear that we're all agreed on the same risks that we have as an organization or things we need to manage? Because again, and it's true for us as well, you're so caught up in the day job, but you do need to look up and out every once in a while, just because we are living in such a volatile environment that actually you can just be subject to these risks, which would have been really obvious if you'd just taken 5 to 10 minutes, whether it's as part of your board meeting or your staff sessions, to say, you know, guys, is there anything that we haven't covered here that we think we ought to, or that we ought to pay attention to? So those would be my two asks. If I could not even just wave a magic wand, if I could just ask you, if you could go ahead and do that, that would be absolutely wonderful.
That's great. And Stuart?
I think going off on a slightly different tangent, I think the first thing I'd ask trustees to do actually is to give themselves a pat on the back and step back and really acknowledge what they're doing and the great value that they're providing. I think it's all too often trustees don't give themselves enough credit for what they do and how much better they've made society and the difference that they make for it. And I think they genuinely should. I think all trustees need to give themselves a pat on the back, take some credit, get that warm feeling inside and say, what we're doing is fantastic. Okay, let's go on and do some more with that one. I've often said if I was the person that could give out medals, there'd definitely be such a thing as a trustee medal. The commitment that we see from the sector is absolutely remarkable. It truly is. And I just kind of, I wish they kind of understood quite how much we think of trustees and the value they provide. And so it's truly remarkable. But I couldn't sit here and be asked that question without also saying, but also please visit our website, look at the full range of advice and guidance that we've got on there. Because I truly think we've got the answer to every question on our website. And sometimes it takes a bit of digging if it's a more complex question, but the answer to most questions are on the website. And if you think you haven't got any questions, I'm willing to bet that if you visited our website, you would discover that actually we're answering questions you didn't even realise you had. So all the advice and guidance is on there. And I think that should be the first port of call. Do dip in and have a look every now and then as well. I think that's a really important message to give.
Absolutely. And I know your colleagues have worked so hard the last couple of years and continue to do so in refreshing the guidance, in making it simpler to read, making using plain English and, you know, the 5-minute trustee guides, which are now in video form. So I know that behind the scenes, a lot of work has happened to make it user friendly. Okay, lastly, are there any exciting projects that you're working on that you can share with us? And Stuart, if I may start with you.
Yeah, and I think it follows on from you about from what you just said there about making things more accessible, more user-friendly. And we just had the green light now to refresh the registration application form. And by refresh, actually, I mean tear up the old one, put it in the beginning and start again from the very beginning. And that's absolutely what you're talking about there, something that's more accessible, something that people understand, questions that people understand, so they give us the information that we can need. So the overall objective of the new application form is for us to get the information so we can make a much earlier decision on whether something's a charity or not. That's the overall objective. But what we want to do is really embrace some of the opportunities out there. Who knows, perhaps IA will be one of those. But I think, you know, there's something around if we can get people to sign the trustee declaration electronically, then that's going to be an advantage for users and the commission. So I think there's some very simple things like that. Hoping to use verification to take out much of our manual assessment. So if we can use AI to actually do the verification process and save some of that manual time, I think that's all going to be needed. So really, truly excited that we're actually refreshing the application form again. I'm hoping that the use of tech and automation will streamline it for users and the commission. And I would hope that if we're sat here having a similar conversation in a year's time, actually what we're talking about is how much better the new form is than the old form. So for me, it's a really exciting project. I think it's probably going to take us a year to get that all in one place. But for me, just massively exciting. I think that'll be a benefit for everybody.
Well, Stuart, I think you know me well enough now to know that I will hold you to that promise in a year's time. Let's check in to see where you guys have got with that endeavour. Artie, what about you?
Sure. So I'll just mention too briefly. So, you know, the broader point around what Stuart said around My Charity Commission account. So that's the sort of new portal by which Trust will engage with trustees. And the reason why I'm excited by that, but also we're daunted internally because it's a huge shift, is just we're hoping it really will give trustees much more tailored advice and quicker access to what they really need relative to their particular organisation. So it's going to be an iterative and long journey, but, you know, we've started it and, you know, obviously it has its glitches. We've got major challenges at the moment that we're trying to work through. But, you know, I just hope everybody can understand we're really trying to pull in the right direction and actually make the most of the technological changes. So for me, I'm actually really excited to see that land when it's at least in its final, I guess, alpha, beta version, whatever it is. The IT team always have a go at me, my lack of sort of relevant terminology when it comes to those sorts of things. But they're doing a fantastic job behind the scenes, I think, and worked really hard at the moment just to really try and get that off the ground in, you know, in conjunction with the contact centre. So that's one thing external. But internally, what I'm really excited about is I'm a huge fan of learning and development. And actually, one of the things we're looking at is how we can really help our current and future workforce have the relevant skills and expertise that we want. You know, if you think about Orlando, our chair having set out his vision for us being a fair, balanced, independent and expert regulator, as Stuart and I have hopefully demonstrated, we've got a lot of expertise, but, you know, that is still with a few people. And as we get newer staff in, it's how do we genuinely sort of pass that knowledge on in a way that allow those people to feel empowered, but also allows us to still continue with operational delivery. So you've got this incredible challenge that I think we need to work through at the moment. But we've got some great initiatives around introducing an internal casework academy, sort of career pathways internally, and also thinking about how we can use internal mentoring in a way to kind of really shape and really develop individuals so that they feel like they can have a long-term career at the Commission, which, you know, Stuart and I will tell you, I'm sure, you know, we slightly learnt by default and by having things thrown at us. But, you know, the new world doesn't always work like that, actually. So thinking a bit more consciously about a person's journey into the Commission and what that might look like, I think is very exciting. So, you know, watch this space. It's part of our sort of workforce plan going forward over the next couple of years. And I'll be really interested when it lands.
Oh, that all sounds really exciting. And thank you both so much for sharing such amazing insights into what you're up to and your own personal journeys. On that note, thank you so much for obviously your time, Artie and Stuart. And thank you for those watching and listening to this as a podcast. I hope you found our conversation inspiring and informative. And I hope to catch you in our next episode. Bye.